Welcome to She Designed a Life She Loves. I'm your host, Katrina Lumsden. If you're ready to start designing a life and business on your terms in a soul-led and easeful way, then this is where you need to hang out. With 15 years business experience and having built a thriving interiors career, it is my passion to now show you the possibilities of expanding your interiors business in a way that you never thought possible. With a strong social media presence, aligned business strategies, and the right mindset, your biggest dreams are possible. In this podcast, I'll be sharing with you the energetics behind creating a soul-led business so you feel empowered to go after those big dreams and design a life you love. Now let's dive into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of She Designed a Life She Loves. I'm always happy to be here chatting to you. And today I have a very special guest that I have had a beautiful conversation with, and I can't wait to share that with you. I chatted to the lovely Kerri-Ann Jones. She's an interior designer, stylist, and author based in Sydney. Her work has been published in Vogue Living, Belle, House and Garden, as well as several international publications. She's a former style editor of Real Living magazine and recently released her absolutely gorgeous book, Curated Style. Kerri-Ann also has her own showroom in Caringbah, where she sells mid-century vintage furniture, contemporary art, and objects. I had the pleasure of visiting her in her showroom in Caringbah. We're both local girls, and it is just beautiful, and it is just Kerri-Ann through and through. We have such a beautiful conversation. She is so open and generous in sharing her journey, how she got there, any advice that she has in getting into that side of the industry. And I'm going to stop talking so we can get into it. Let's chat to Kerri-Ann Jones. So today I am joined by Kerri-Ann Jones, and I know that everybody out there knows who you are. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because it is a part of the styling industry that I never dived into and have not very much knowledge about. So I think this is going to be a great conversation. And also just to talk about your whole journey in this industry. So let's start there. Can you share a little bit about you, if anybody out there doesn't know who you are, a bit about your life maybe and your journey into becoming an interior stylist?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. Firstly, I'm very excited to be here, so thank you. Yeah, so, well, going right back to the start, I actually didn't start in interiors. I worked in the music industry for about 9 years, worked in music publishing for my husband's business, and that was really fun. I worked with a lot of TV shows, helping them find music. But then I kind of just got very burnt out and had reached my full potential in that role. And I had bought an apartment with my partner at the time, and we were renovating, and that's where my love of interiors started, was just renovating my apartment in Coogee, 20 years ago, a long time ago. And honestly, I loved Real Living magazine. That was my favorite. And
yes, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even afford to buy the magazine. I just go up to Borders Books, and they used to have a really great magazine section, like international, so all the L Decoration, Living, etc., and then Real Living. And I just get a coffee and read through them and put them back on the shelf. And then I just became obsessed, and I reached out to Real Living and just said, can I assist on one of your shoots? And they said, sure. And I assisted Sarah Ellison when she was style editor at Real Living. And
that's a pivotal moment, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I just assisted her for a few years and then worked in the office so I went sort of from being very senior in the music industry to then being right at the bottom as the editorial coordinator at Real Living. But I didn't care. I loved it.
You would have loved it, yeah.
I just wanted to learn as much as I could, and I just found it really fascinating and started studying interiors as well. Then I was freelancing, so I sort of made the jump from assistant to stylist with the help of the team at Real Living. It would give me some what was called handywoman shoots. So back then at Real Living, this is how Deb Bibby, the editor, used to sort of test stylists, as if you could do a DIY project and make it look good, then you're
kind of, you can do anything.
Exactly. And yeah, they were like the hardest shoots that you could do. So I got some of those, and then they opened a magazine called Homes Plus, the same team, which was all DIY projects, doing makeovers, like make over someone's house for $1,000. It's like, what can you do for $1,000 back then? But that was sort of my way in. I got in and then started freelancing for other magazines. And then Sarah left to start her her brand. Mm. And then I became style editor of Real Living magazine, which was amazing, which was a dream.
Very cool. Yeah. So cool. And for somebody that might be listening and thinking that that sounds really interesting to me, would you suggest that they do reach out to sort of just be a bit of an intern and follow along to get started?
Yeah, I mean, the industry has changed a lot since then. There's less magazines now. Yes. But absolutely, I would reach out to stylists. You can reach out to magazines as well, but I don't think they really have the capacity for that anymore because the teams are much smaller. They don't really do as many shoots anymore. But reach out to stylists. So if you have a look in the magazines, it'll say who the story is styled by. Find them on Instagram, reach out to them and say, hey, can I assist you on your next shoot?
On a project, yeah.
It's free, and then eventually you'll get paid. Yeah. Not very much, but still.
Yeah, but it's a great yeah, start for people to – sometimes we just don't know where to start.
Yes.
You know, when you've just decided, I love this, so I want to make this into a money-earning kind of thing, it's like, okay, now what? What's next? Where do I go? So that's really good
yeah,
advice.
Yeah, you just sort of just ask.
Yeah.
And just ask a few until someone says yes.
I have found that so much in my career. Like you just assume people are going to say no, but very often you're surprised and someone will say yes, like me asking you to come on this podcast. And you're like, yes.
Of course, yeah. Exactly. The worst that someone's going to say is no.
Absolutely, that's right. Someone else. Yeah, yep, that's right. And I've also been taught by coaches in the podcasting industry that no's not always no. Like sometimes you do need to follow up and reach out a second time because we're busy and we just haven't got to that email, or we just thought about it and thought, yeah, that sounds good, and then it's out of our head. Like we all do it. So I think the follow up as well is really
Absolutely.
Important. Yeah.
And I, especially when I worked in magazines, like we would get inundated with, you know, emails from PR companies, brands, whatever, and it wasn't that we were being rude, it was just we were busy. So, and then if you follow up, that was like, oh yes, I do have to get back to that person, and then you get back to them. So definitely follow up, because usually it's not a no, it's just left their brain and they've got
exactly
else. So absolutely follow up, and it might just be, I don't have something for you right now, but I'll keep you in mind for something in the future. So,
and then even reaching back out in 6 months' time and just saying, hey, remember
absolutely.
Me?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with you on that.
Can you share with us what it looks like on set? Like, how does it all work? And a day in the life of a magazine.
Style editor. Well, I was style editor at Real Living. That's generally the title.
Yeah.
Well, each day is very different. So if it's a shoot day, it's usually starting at 7, and we have, so back when I was doing it, we had a studio called B2 Studios at Alexandria, and we'd get all of our deliveries sent there, and then on the shoot day we'd bring them all into the studio, unpack everything. That would take about 2 hours in itself, just unpacking everything. So we would borrow from suppliers.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Various suppliers, we'd let them know, hey, I've got this shoot coming up. I'd really love to use your dining table. Can you please send it? So they'd send it to the shoot, and then we'd bring it into the studio. Or if it's homewares, we'd unpack all the homewares in the boxes and label everything, because at the end of the day, it just, you know,
it's everywhere.
It's chugging it all in. Like, you know, have to pack it and make sure you're sending it to the right person, right company. So do that, and then you'd set up the first set. So we generally shoot 3 sets. So it might be, usually it would be like living room, dining room, bedroom. And so we have like what's called flats. So it's like a kind of like a faux wall that they've built. And we might wallpaper that. So we'd get double-sided tape, wallpaper that with double-sided tape, lay the floor, which might be like the studio just had like a sheet of lino, so we'd do that or whatever. Or if it was tiling, that would take forever. We'd have to tile the floor, but not like just lay them on the floor, not out. Then bring all the furniture in, hang any pendant lights sort of from C stands above, and then the photographer would get the angles, then we'd shoot it. Sometimes we might have a model. So for Real Living, we would have often have a model. So I would have cast the model like the week before. So she's in hair and makeup, getting fashion ready. So that's also another layer as well, which can be a bit intense to try and get these shots done with all that happening too. Mm. So we'd shoot that, do some detail shots. So you get like your main hero shot, which might be the cover, and then we go in to do tighter details. So if it's a bedroom, you might do like the bedside table or that kind of thing. And then pack that all down and then do the next shot. Same thing. You might have to wallpaper the walls, or you might have, if it's a different wallpaper, then we'd move that wall out, bring another wall in, so we'd already have that ready, and then set that up, shoot it, same thing again.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and then after all that, you'd pack everything down, so we wouldn't be finished till like 6:37.
Yeah.
So it's a 12-hour day.
It's not for the faint-hearted. It sounds like hard
Absolutely
work.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. So that's a shoot day, and then just a regular day in the office would be, you know, meeting with the team, about, you know, issues that are coming up, what stories, what do they need shot, what's going to be the next cover. Yeah, we might be casting a model for the cover. Yeah, and then I would be out on the road sourcing for different, like going to different suppliers, see what furniture they've got for a shoot that I've got coming up, begging them, can I borrow it?
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of fun though.
It is. It's just very busy and every day is different. So there's not really a routine. Like, and things pop up very suddenly, so you have to then jump on that. So, yeah, it was good though. I loved it.
Yeah, it sounds like such a great sort of avenue to go down. And you're not dealing with clients as such, you know, when you're on a residential project. So you've kind of taking that out of the mix. You've got a little bit more, obviously, more creative freedom in that way. And, like, you kind of made your way up to the top. And so is that when you kind of really your career sort of blew up? And you became known and
I had because of my job at Real Living, I was really lucky in that I got to meet a lot of brands, artists, creatives, people in the industry, designers, architects. So it really opened up my network in a really incredible way. And because of that, that led to a lot of opportunities open up for me. So when I left after about 2 years because there was like a merger with like Inside Out magazine, Country Style. And with that came redundancies. And so I was made redundant. But to be honest, it was the biggest blessing in disguise that I, at the time, was devastated.
Yes.
But then now I'm like, thank God that happened. You don't see it at the time.
You just, no, you don't.
No.
But you have a trust in it, don't you?
Yeah. And it just led to so many opportunities opening up for me after leaving because I knew all these people. They're like, oh, come do this shoot for me. Come do this. Can you, you know, do these this brand content for me? And then I had left and, yeah, just freelancing. And just it just once people knew I was available, I just got really busy. Yeah. And then it just led to just a snowball effect.
Mm, and that's so collaborating with brands or that they're paying you, obviously, to style and photograph.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it did. Yeah. And I never expected it to go that way at all, to be honest. Yeah. Like I never thought that was a thing.
Yeah.
When I left, I was just like, I just want to style shoots. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just it's led to a lot of amazing opportunities. And I think as well, part of that is you have to let people know what you want to do as well, like put it out there, the type of work that you want to be working on. If I want to work on, say, more brand campaigns, well, then try and if I've done one of those and put that work out there on Instagram and that seems to bring it back in. Yeah. Yeah. So you have to put out there the type of work that you want to attract back and let people know, hey, I'm available for that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the same with not putting out what you don't want to be doing as well.
Exactly, isn't
it? Yeah, it works both ways. So there's a lot of stylists who listen to this podcast who are just starting out in the industry in any capacity. What kind of advice would you give them to if they want to become a stylist?
I think it's always good to assist other stylists just so you can get the lay of the land and understand how it works. So assisting other stylists or, you know, interior businesses, just so you get that sort of foundation understanding. Then I would say you need to create, to have initiative really in creating your own content to show people what you're capable of. So that might be styling your own house and creating content around that and putting that on Instagram. As much as we love hate Instagram, yeah. Personally hate, but it is very much where people go to source my portfolio. That's the first place they see my work is on Instagram. And then they might follow up to my website. But Instagram is the first place.
So it's like your business card now these days, isn't it?
I hate it because I do feel like it's such a grind having to put that out there, but it works.
So important.
Yeah, so start creating content of what, you know, you want to be doing. If you want to be styling people's homes, style your house, style your friends' homes. If you can afford it, get a photographer to shoot that so it looks professional.
Yeah.
Obviously, create your own website. That's crucial as well. And just keep putting out that content, even, you know, just keep doing it because a lot of the time with the algorithm it doesn't get seen, so you have to put it out there again. So just keep going and keep trying. You can't give up.
No.
No
work. Tenacity.
Exactly. Tenacity. No work is just going to fall in your lap. Oh, I'm a stylist now.
Mm.
Like, it's just not going to happen. You need to keep putting out there, hey, and reminding people, hey, I'm a stylist. I've got availability for next month. Let me know if you want any help. Just keep putting that messaging out there and then eventually you will get clients.
Yeah, and once you get one and you get another one and it becomes that word of mouth.
That's right.
Something that I teach my clients, I've done a lot of social media courses and marketing courses and things, and so it's a very heavy part of my mentoring and my program, and that is like how to create content when you've got no content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to create when you haven't had any projects yet. And there is so much you can do. Like you can be doing flat lays, you can be styling a shelf, you can be a corner, just one little corner of your house that looks nice. Like there are so many ways that you can be creating content of your style and the way that you would create spaces.
Exactly. And I also think a great idea would be do you like pretend to do your dream project. Like if you like get source all the materials from suppliers, do that flat lay.
Yes.
If you're a designer, do the drawings. Yep. What's the dream kitchen that you
create the concept?
Yeah, what's the concept? Like do it all and show people, take people on that journey. This is like my dream kitchen that I'd love to design. If you're looking to renovate your kitchen, let me know because I'd love to create this for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Create the work and then people will see what you're capable of and then it will come.
Yeah, yeah. I love that advice. You do residential projects as well, don't you, for clients? Yeah. So are you pretty busy with that kind of work or do you take on maybe one or two a year?
I am busy with that actually. Yeah. It sort of varies because some projects are bigger, might be full scale, others are small. Like I actually have had two international clients in the last month, one in Miami, one in Dubai.
Yeah.
Which has been great. And that's just been, can you source, like I don't have to procure everything. It's just, can you come up with the selections and the layout? And so that's been really interesting. It's opened up my whole world what's available. Like one client had a really great budget. So I can go to town.
Love that.
Yes. So that was really fun. So all the projects are really different. And then, you know, after we record this, I'm going to a waterfront home, you know, like to do a small, like, a really beautiful home. So every project is different. And I don't just take on big projects. I'm happy to do small ones. Because they're often really lovely to do.
They can be really fun. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If the brief is great, I'll take it because I love a good creative challenge.
If you're given creative freedom and if you're not being sort of having that stranglehold on how the outcome is, I think that they're the ones that we obviously love.
Yeah, if you enjoy it, then yes, it doesn't even feel like work.
And no, that's right.
No matter what size the job is, you know, if you're having fun and you're enjoying it, then that's the main thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
I have some of my clients who knew I was chatting to you said, can you ask her what software she uses? Do you use anything in the back end? Like a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Tara Wokolski. She uses Programmer.
Yes. I was just about to say Programmer. Yes. Yeah. Love it. It's so great. Highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I use when I'm sourcing. I will, like, you know, I don't really like to use Photoshop. I prefer the simplicity of Canva. So I'll do I do my mood boards in there and my concepts, my doc in Canva, and then I'll use Programmer
for the client. Yeah. Well, yep. There you go. That's obviously Programmer's it.
Yeah, I keep it as simple as possible. That works for me. Mm. Yep.
Works with clients too, doesn't it? We're all busy. So I love to be very real with people and share. I've shared many mistakes that I've made along the way. Is there anything that you can sort of share with us that you might have done in your career where you've thought, oh my God, what did I just do?
I don't know. Like, I would just say the most recent thing that I've realized would be rushing. I rush. Like, not because I'm juggling a lot. And say if I'm doing a client proposal, I might just like have a doc that I've already done in Canva. So then I'll make a copy and then change all the details for this new client. And I'll check it two or three times over. But because I haven't checked it slowly and I've kind of like, yep. Rush to it.
Yeah, you've forgotten to change something.
Yeah, I forgot to change the name. I'm like, oh my God, that is so embarrassing. So unprofessional. See,
we're all human. We all do these sorts of things.
No, but it's so, like, if you're trying to be at, you know,
a professional height,
high level, like, those are very basic things to stuff up. And so that I find that truly embarrassing. So I'm now going to make sure that I don't rush those things. Because it's really important.
It is.
You know.
Client experience is so important.
The first impression of you is that document that you give them. And if it's got someone else's name on, I can't believe I said that. It's embarrassing, but it doesn't look good. So don't rush. Like, I would say.
Triple, quadruple check. Yeah.
Yes. And do it slowly. And when you're not tired.
Yeah, exactly. Not at 10 o'clock at night.
Even sometimes I get my husband to check over comments as well. Get someone else's eyes over it because they will be able to go, oh, yeah, he's, you know, grammar errors or whatever. So get another set of eyes over it before you send it out.
Thanks for sharing. Thanks.
I mean, I'm sure there are many other things along with that
as well. Yeah.
That's sort of the one thing that came to mind recently.
But the thing is, when we make these mistakes, you'll never do it again. Like, you really do learn from the mistakes that you make. So we all grow.
Also, actually, one other thing would be even with friends, have a contract.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just make sure everything, like, if they're paying, if anyone is paying, you have to have a contract. Because
great advice.
Yeah, I've had an incident like years ago when I was very sort of early on, and I was an interior designer. I was like, yeah, I'll style your shoot, and you know, I was still doing it in a very professional way. Ended up going in a magazine, all of that, but it just didn't end well. And like, they expected me to be there for 12 hours. It's like, no, this is an 8-hour shoot, and you know, you were late and all these other things. And if it's not in an agreement, then no, you've got no leg to stand on to dispute things. So it always doesn't matter, like, how much you think you know someone, get it in writing.
Totally agree. Something that all designers and stylists want is a magazine feature.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the secret? What is the secret to getting your projects featured in a magazine?
Yeah, it is very competitive now. So for an interior designer, architect or builder, I would suggest you have to get an editorial stylist, so someone who specializes in styling for photo shoots. And the difference being, for editorial, we're always looking for something very unique, like really different pieces that you can't really get off the shelf. And it has more of a sort of artistic kind of style to it for the photos. And we also, when we're styling, we're shooting in a way that is, how do we imagine this will look on a page? Mm. Where are they? Where's the white space for the copy? You know, if there's a potential cover shot, does that have enough room for the cup, like, you know, for the masthead and cover line? So we're sort of thinking in that way, or like if we're doing a landscape shot, where's the gutter? So you make sure that if you're shooting a kitchen, that the sink isn't in the gutter. So there's just those little details that are really important. So to get published, so that's first off, you really need to have someone who's got that editorial eye and can style in that way, and especially as well as the photographer who also knows to shoot that way. And then you just submit the images to an editor or creative director. So you can find those details in the magazine, or, you know, generally if a stylist or photographer has had their work published, they'll have those contact details so they can reach out for you on your behalf and pitch the story. So they would, you just want to write a very brief email, you know, like one paragraph synopsis of who they are, like who is it, you know, if the homeowner is okay with sharing who they are, what they do, where the home's located, a little bit of details about the renovation or the design, just some
the bit of a story of behind it.
The story, exactly. And then I like to do a PDF, like a storyboard, sort of like a layout as if it was in a magazine, because then they can see, they can just sort of imagine then what it looks like.
Yeah.
And then generally if they are interested, they'll get back to you within a day or two. But again, like you said, follow up, because you have, like, they might be on deadline, they might be overseas at the Milan Design Fair, or like, you know, editors and creative directors are very busy, so they, it might get lost. So definitely follow up again in a week and see. And then if you don't hear back, go to the next magazine that you think. But you also need to make sure you pitch to the right magazine.
Mm.
You have to look at the houses that they've got in, say, the latest issue. Is that project of a similar style and level? If so, then, you know, that's the right magazine. If not, you've got to find somewhere else, because if you're going to pitch the wrong types of projects and they're not going, next time you pitch, they're probably not going to take you seriously. Yeah. So you have to pitch, you know, you don't want to pitch like a Vogue living style home to Home Beautiful, because that's not what their readers are reading. Like, you want more accessible stories. So you just need to make sure that it matches their readership, like who their readers are.
I was told a few years ago that if you do want to be published in a magazine, to hold off on sharing the photos on your socials and everything first, because they want to be the first time that it's kind of out there. Is that right?
That used to be the case.
Right.
It's not. It's okay. Fine to share.
Yeah.
They don't, and I've spoken to editors about that, and they're like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, we don't, because sometimes they will hold the images for 6 months. So you can't expect it to not have that on your Instagram for six months.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So there's much more flexibility with that now. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about your book, your beautiful book, Curated Style. How did that all come about, and what was that process like for you?
Yeah, well, when I left Real Living Magazine, I had always wanted to do a book, and I had come up with, you know, a few concepts actually. It's sort of been 5 years in the making. I had spoken to other publishers who were interested, but then there was always like, no, yes, no. And then so I just pitched Curated Style to some other publishers, and two were interested, and one of them was Smith Street Books, who I'm with now.
Yeah.
And they were amazing. They gave me as much creative freedom as I wanted.
Perfect.
And just with the cover, you know, I was like, I want linen and I want foil, and I know those things are very expensive.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I can just get one, that would be great. And they were like, yeah, no problem. And then the book felt like, when we did the layouts, there was more copy and not enough images. They're like, yeah, add another 50 pages. They're just such a great publisher to work with. So that was, yeah, it's been 5 years to get to that point, to find the right publisher who understood my vision and let me have the creative freedom that I needed to create, to make it. But yeah, it's been 5 years. It hasn't been just something that's fallen in my lap. Like, it took a long time to get that over the line, and a few different concepts to get there as well. I actually had pitched originally to another publisher a different concept, and then unfortunately a week later someone actually released the book of that same concept. It was just a fluke.
Really?
I had no idea that this book yes. was coming out, and they're like, that's really unfortunate, but we do love, you know, what you
the idea, yeah.
Your idea, can you create, you know, come up with some other concepts. So, and that's where Curated Style sort of evolved from.
Would you do it again?
Create another book. It was a lot of work.
Is it in you?
I'm not ready for it yet. I would, if I do it again, I would do it differently. I took off to write it. I took off 6 months to write and shoot it. And it took about a year to, like, I thought, okay, I've handed in my manuscripts and the photos. There you go.
Yeah, it's done.
So there's like you're working with the book designer to design it and the copy editor to edit, and there's multiple changes all the time, and you need yeah. to be available. Like, we need this. Can you come back to us tomorrow? Okay, I'll just stop everything that I'm working on and do this for you.
Yeah.
So, it was sort of felt like almost a full-time job over kind of 18
yeah. months. But it was all worth it though.
It was a lot of work, but it was a dream that I've always wanted yeah. to fulfill, and I'm so happy with it, and it's on its second print run now, which is really good. Exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. It's done really well in the US, which is a nice surprise. So. Yeah, no, I think it might happen, but just not yet.
Yeah. Speaking of that, like not might happen, but not yet, your renovation.
I mean,
a lot of your images that you've shared in the recent past have been in your home, your beautiful home in Dolans Bay, isn't it?
Yes.
Just gorgeous. How was that whole experience for you? If nobody's listened to your other podcast that you've shared about. Yes.
Look, it was quite an epic journey. I think it was just timing as well. We had started during first COVID, so in 2020, and we had just a whole lot of challenges in life that were going on at the time. My husband got really sick, and so did some of his family members, and COVID, and so it was just a lot going on personally, and then throw in a renovation. And I did the renovation actually as a owner builder with my dad. So my dad's a bricklayer and stonemason. So we did that together. But I think what really helped us through is just having a really great tradespeople that we trusted. Dad obviously knew a lot of people in the industry. So he's like, oh, you've got to get, you know, Nick from ND Build to do it for, like, build it for you. I'm like, great. And he, you know, our builder was amazing. So you've got to get a really good team, and that really got us through over the line. But it definitely had challenges. And I'm a stylist. Now I'm a designer, and I've studied, and I know so much more than I did 6 years ago. But I think the challenge for me back then was I could see the vision, but I just did not have the technical skills to draw it.
Yeah.
And so.
You've since studied and done.
Yes.
AutoCAD, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was hard to articulate what I wanted. And in particular, my ensuite. So I wanted to do this Palladiana floor, which is, you know, Italian style, and no tiler wanted to go near it. They were like, it took me like 6 months to find a tiler willing to do it. They're like, what are you doing? This looks terrible. Like, no, I don't want to do this. And all they, you know, give me a really high fee.
Oh, yeah.
No one wanted to go near it. And eventually my dad was like, found a tiler who he knew and was willing to do it and did an amazing job. But it was such a process. But he understood the process. It was like, what do we have to do? So because my dad's a stonemason, he had all the tools to cut the stone. So it wasn't, you would just expect you would be able to like smash the stone and you get some pieces, but you get lots of smaller pieces and pieces that you can't really use.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to cut instead of smash. So they laid it out in our carport, and that took about 3 or 4 days, I think, maybe even longer, to lay it out like a jigsaw puzzle. Then we transferred that jigsaw puzzle to the bathroom, laid it, routed it. Then it needed to be polished with a diamond drill bit multiple times. So It took, I think it was like 8 days to.
I need to go and find a photo of it and have a look at it because I'm sure it's amazing.
Yes, yeah. but that was a challenge because no one really understood or it hadn't really been done here before. Now it's been done and people like, you know.
Yeah.
You've seen it and now it's been replicated and whatever. But at the time, 6 years ago, no one had done it then. So it was, no one understood the vision.
Yeah, that's the cost of being innovative in your designs.
Yeah, it's true. People don't get it. But and then when it's finished, like, oh, that looks really good. I'm like, I know.
Yeah, told you.
Yeah, so it was definitely, there was lots of challenges just for me personally because I lacked the skills. But now would I do it again? Yes. We're not going to move. We love our house. So we're staying put.
Yeah, no, that's nice to hear. It's a beautiful part of the year. We've talked about this before. We're both Shire girls. Yeah. We love the Shire, so don't anyone say anything bad about it.
Exactly. Don't knock it. It's so great.
That's such a beautiful part of the world.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I've been so close to the water.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
You have achieved so much in your career. I think, you know, you've done the book and you've had the magazine side of business and residential and beautiful projects. You've now got a showroom as well. You have a beautiful showroom in Caringbah. So do you want to share about that and how that all came about?
Sure. I think it came about in for a few different reasons. One was because of all the photo shoot styling that I do, a lot of our stylists source from the same stores. And so what I was finding is that we were all using the same pieces in our shoots and it just wasn't looking like we had sourced unique pieces. So I wanted to have an inventory of that I could draw from to add those really interesting pieces to the shoot. So that was one reason. Another reason was I was sourcing or like vintage and unique finds for clients of residential projects.
Yeah.
So I was doing that anyway and I just thought, well, why don't I make these available for everybody? You know, if I find extra things along the way, why don't I have a shop and people can access them and, you know, and buy them. And same with art as well. Like I come across so many incredible artists, ceramic makers and, you know, if I'm borrowing it for a shoot, then I get back and then I'm like, oh, like I would love to be able to share this with the world and you know.
Someone to have it in their home.
Yeah,
to enjoy.
And I've got a great platform, so it will be great to be able to sell this on behalf of artists as well. And because I love finding beautiful art. It's just, it really makes such an impact in people's homes. So that's sort of how it came about. And also another reason is I eventually would like to transition out of styling photo shoots purely like not because I don't enjoy it. I love it, but my body does not agree.
Yeah. I was like that, but with property styling, it just got to a point where I'd, at the end of the day, I'd be sitting on the lounge and I could not physically move. And I thought, I can't keep doing this. Yeah.
I know. That's how I feel after photo shoots as well. I have had times where I can't move the next day. I'm laying in bed and my whole body is throbbing and my brain is fuzzy brain.
Yeah.
And it's just not sustainable for me physically anymore. So eventually I, you know, want to transition into just still styling for, you know, residential clients and commercial clients and design, but also the shop as well.
It is beautiful. The show, everyone has to go and have a look at it. It's in Caringbah.
Yes.
It is beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm loving having a space, especially in the Shire, because there's not really many design stores in the Shire. So I wanted to bring cool design to our part of the world.
Yeah, and there's so many beautiful homes in the Shire that would, like these kind of pieces would just be such a beautiful complement to them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and it's close to home as well. I didn't want to have a space, you know, in the city and I'd have to drive and that was really important to me that I could be close to home and, you know, pick up the kids from school, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm loving it. It's great.
Yeah, that's nice. When I had my shop, my kids used to come after school and they'd sit there for an hour. I just opened till 4:30.
Yes.
And they would just sit there the whole time going, are we going home yet? This is so boring. Have another marshmallow.
Yeah. I tell mine to bring their book, and so they just lay on a sofa and read their book.
Yes, that's their quiet book time. Yo, what have you been like in the industry, like networking and getting out there? Like, are you somebody who finds that really hard to socially to go out and meet new people, or does that come naturally to you?
I am naturally an introvert, 100%. I need my me time away from everybody. So I am an introvert, and I do struggle sometimes networking, but I also really enjoy it. And I've now built up a network where if I go to an event, I will generally know at least one person. Yeah. And if I don't, that's okay. Like, I'll introduce myself to whoever is hosting the event and chat to them and have a look around. I don't usually stay very long at events just because I go to so many, and I also have a curfew. My kids want me home for bedtime.
Yes.
And they get upset with me if I'm not home for bedtime. So I'll generally will leave an event by 7:30. Unless it's like a sit-down dinner, then I won't. But if it's just like a cocktail event, I'm kind of in and out, have a look at whatever's new, whatever they're launching, chat to whoever's hosting the event and meet anyone new, and then I kind of leave.
It's really important to do it though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also show my support as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I like to show my support for anyone launching a new brand or new product or art, that kind of thing. It's a lot of work goes into that, and yeah, I just like to show up as much as I can, even if it's not for very long. I just want people
to know. Showing your face, yeah.
Yeah, that I care and that I'm there, and I'll post about it, you know, on stories if I'm, you know, really excited about it. I enjoy it, but then I am also an introvert at heart.
Yeah, I'm the same. Speaking of the children, how do you go managing everything that you have? Like, do you have some really strong boundaries that you really stick to, or like how does your week look?
Yeah, so I'm lucky that my husband helps me a lot with the kids. So he does like school pickups, drop-offs. So that really helps a lot. So I have that help there. And then I do have boundaries. Like, I don't work on Easter Hat Parade or Book Week Parade. Like, they're my favorite days. I will not work, no matter how good the work is. I have to be there.
You have to be there for sure.
Love seeing them in their little costumes and being so proud of themselves. Like, it's the best. So I will never give up that. And yeah, I set my schedule around my family life, so I make it work for me. I think that's one of the benefits of working for yourself, is that you can set those boundaries and just say, no, I can't work that day. Sorry, I'm not available at that time. So I don't think I could go back to working for someone else, because I just need that flexibility. It's really important to me. And so I make my work life work
with
my family life. Yeah.
And I think that's something that I'm the same. I think I would find it very hard after so many years being able to work in around what's going on in my life. Now for me, it's not young kids, it's older parents that I'm working in around, and there's always something, and that's a priority for me, and it always has been. So that it's just been a beautiful career to have, raising your kids. And
it's so important. I think well, for me, and I think creatively, I need that flexibility too. Yeah. I can't work to a 9-to-5 schedule. What if I am too tired at 5 o'clock? I need the flexibility, and I don't want a boss again.
No,
those days are over.
What do you do for you? What do you do to kind of fill your cup and look after yourself?
I would say Pilates. Love Pilates. I've been doing it, feel very old saying this, for 25 years.
Wow.
So I
love Pilates.
Yeah, I went to a performing arts high school, and we had the first Pilates studio in Sydney. So I've been doing it before it was cool. It's always sort of been a part of my routine. So I always just feel so much better after I've done it. I sort of feel like I'm put back together again almost.
Yes.
And then I go for walks. So I like to go for a walk at the end of the day. And sometimes, I would say most times, I actually don't listen to anything. I don't listen to a podcast or music, because I'm just downloading everything that's happened that day, that week. What am I going to do tomorrow? Planning the week. It's sort of all in my head. So I like to go on for walks to help me just digest all of that. So they're the two things really. And then just catching up with friends, even if it's just for a walk down at Cronulla along the beach and catching up. Just keeping it simple. I'm not really, I wish I had hobbies actually.
Yeah.
But I don't have the time, but I'd love to have hobbies. But just keeping it simple, I think just moving my body is important.
Yes. I love that you said when you go for walks, you don't listen to anything, because I think we're so often just on all the time and filling our brains with more information or conversations or so. I'm the same. I like to just sometimes just go down to Cronulla and sit at the beach and just look at the ocean.
And it's so great.
It's just nothing better.
Yeah. I do that as well. When I can, I'll go down to Cronulla and just watch
the waves. It just grounds you or something, doesn't it? It's just being, having that beautiful ocean sound and just love it.
Me
love
too.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
So you will just quickly talk about your podcast. You have a podcast called House of Style with Jono Fleming.
Yes.
You aren't launching new episodes anymore. It's sort of sitting, having a bit of a rest.
Yes.
Do you want to share a little bit about that and what it's about in case other people haven't listened to it yet?
Jono and I launched House of Style when we both left magazines. So he was at Inside Out and I was at Real Living. And because we had access to all these incredible creatives and we felt like their stories sort of stopped at us when we went to these, you know, press viewings or whatever, and like, it's such a cool story there. Why doesn't anyone know about it? So we launched the podcast and interviewed some incredible creative people in the industry, and just to find out what their life journey was, you know, how it started, what's happening now, and what have they got in the future. And absolutely loved it. I mean, we have no plans to continue purely because it's just really tricky to scheduling wise between my schedule, Jono's, and the guests and whatever we've got going on. But never say never. But
never say never.
Definitely.
And like I said to you before, it's evergreen. It's out there. Yeah. And there's always new stylists and designers coming into the industry who are like looking for that next podcast to listen to. And so it'll always be
incredible, inspiring stories.
Oh, I know.
Every time we would finish recording, we will be on such a high because, like, oh my gosh, we feel so inspired by their story. They're amazing. And to be honest, a lot of those creatives, there's a pivot. It's a pivot in my story. I went from music industry to interiors. Same with a lot of creatives that we interviewed. No one has had a linear path in interiors. It's always been, you know, the second career or third or fourth.
Yeah. And that's where I talk about a lot of, like, intuition, like listening to what you're feeling, because often we can really get stuck in something because you think, like for me, I don't design or do any styling for clients anymore, and that was a hard decision to make.
Yeah.
But I just knew it was time for me to do different things, and now I'm mentoring, I'm doing my own projects. But if I ignored that and I continued to do it, I would have just ended up resenting those clients and becoming this bitter, twisted person. So you do have to listen to your intuition.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's very much how my career has been built on, is just intuition and just doing what feels right at that time for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Definitely. Yay.
And so this podcast is called She Designed a Life She Loves. How are you designing a life that you love?
Question.
You have pretty much kind of told us, but.
Yeah, I think it's just designing it around my lifestyle and my family life, really. That is essential for me, making it work so I don't miss those special moments.
As a mum with older children, I would say absolutely don't miss any of them because they just grow up so quickly don't want to borrow you.
I know.
No, they do. They do. It's just different, obviously. I'm really proud that I was able to be there for all of those things. And I think that's the beauty of the work that we do. We can do that.
I'm in a very fortunate position where I can.
Yeah.
And I don't take it for granted. I try and show up as much as I can. And, yeah, I do. I really cherish those moments and I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel very, very lucky.
What's next?
I think it's just really trying to evolve my shop, my gallery, and trying to transition into that a bit more. So, yeah, there's no big projects really. Like, there's lots of projects going on, but no big personal projects for me at the moment, which is unusual. But I think
probably nice and relaxing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've been in the industry for how many years now?
About 13.
13. You've done a lot in 13 years.
Yeah.
You should be really proud of what you've done. And you are a known name in the industry. And I know that everyone's going to love listening to this episode. Where can they follow you on Instagram if they don't already, and your website, all the details? Yeah. I'll pop them in the show notes too, but if you want to share.
Sure. My Instagram is Kerry Ann, all one word, no hyphen, dot Jones, and my website is kerryannjones.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for, I know, making some time in your busy schedule to chat to me. It's been so lovely to hear about your journey and just sharing so much with us as well.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a joy to chat with you.